Welcome to Shasta County Elections, presented by KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. I am Lynn Fritz, your producer and host. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and a volunteer at KKRN. This interview today is with Chris Kellstrom. He is the incumbent and chairman of the Board of Supervisors of Shasta County and a candidate for District 5. Welcome to the program, Chris.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So glad you are here. The intention with these programs is to help people to be able to hear from the candidates, and all the candidates get the same list of questions so that people can compare their answers if they choose to do so. But really, the intention more so is to get to know the candidates. So thank you for taking time to
Absolutely.
Be here. Yeah. So, like everyone to know, background for the individuals running for office. Where did you grow up?
I grew up right here in good old River City.
So yeah.
Went to the same high school my parents graduated from, Enterprise High. So local guy, been here my whole life.
That's awesome. Yep. Locally grown.
Absolutely.
And after high school, what was your next step? Did you go off to college?
Well, I played 1 year at basketball at Shasta College. And I remember my second semester, I'd gone to work in a grocery store in Anderson. I'd, you know, got a high school job in a grocery store in Reading. And then I'd been working in a store in Anderson, and I was kind of starting to open it and close it and starting to get into management. And I remember taking an introduction to business class at the time. And I may still remember it verbatim. The instructor's up there and he says, "Profit. What is profit? Profit's the amount of money you have left over after the initial cost of an item and the overhead is deducted from the selling price." And I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" And I'm looking around and all these people are furiously writing this down. You know, meantime, I'm in the store and I'm figuring out, you know, labor hours and gross percentages and net percentages and net profits. And I'm thinking, why am I here? This is a waste of my time. So that summer, I became manager of that grocery store at 19 years old. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So what was your next step after that?
Well, I met my ex-wife there, and she was going to Sacramento to go to court reporting school. So I thought, well, I've been the store manager here for a couple of years. I'm not going any further than that, you know. And I thought there's lots of places in Sacramento. I think I'll move down there with her. So we moved down to the Sacramento area, found the small community of Galt in the very southern section of Sacramento County. And I was actually working in Galt, and I told her, I said, you know, you should come down here and check out Galt. This is kind of reminds me of Cottonwood a little bit, you know.
Ah.
So we ended up moving down to Galt. We rented for 10 years because that was not home. That was just, it was temporary. You know, we just rented because this was home. Up here was home. And after 10 years, I said, you know, let's just quit throwing our money away and, you know, wasting our time. We've been here 10 years. We're probably going to be here longer. You know, I had a really good job there, and she couldn't find enough work up here at the time. So we ended up buying our first home, and we had our first daughter. And then after we had our kid, it's kind of like, okay, we survived down here for 10 or 12 years, but I'm not raising my kid down here. So we moved back to Cottonwood in 2001, I believe.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And from 2001, you ended up being elected to office. What year did you first start?
I started campaigning in 2022. I won in like December of 2022. It was verified. And then I was seated in January of 2023.
What initially drew you to run for office?
You know, it's kind of ironic because about 2014, so, you know, 8 or 10 years before that, I was working with the State of Jefferson movement, and I was doing a lot of stuff with them. And there was a vote that Les Baugh made that really, really irked me. I was not very happy with it. And I remember at the time vowing that, you know, if nobody else runs against him, I'll run against him myself. And then 4 years later, Melissa Hunt ran against him, and I fully supported her. And then, 2 years later, I went and talked to Melissa, and back in 2020, right before COVID shut everything down, we were at a Republican Reagan-Lincoln dinner. And I said, "Are you going to run, you know, in 2 years?" She says, "Well, I'm not sure." And I said, "Well, if you don't, I'm going to." And she goes, "No, do it. You have my blessing, but you might want to talk to Barron." And Barron Browning was a friend of mine. So I went up to him. I mean, we're still friendly. And I went up to him and I said, "Hey, Barron, are you going to run?" And he says, "Well, I'm not sure." And I said, "Well, if you don't, I'm going to." And he says, "Nothing says we both can't run." So I thought, okay, I'm not doing anything behind your back. I'm not, you know.
Yeah.
So that's when I decided to throw my hat in the ring. And ironically, Les Baugh now, I mean, he was the one that originally kind of irritated me where I wanted to run. And then now he endorses me, and he endorsed me, and it was great. You know, we get along fabulously. So it's kind of funny how politics work.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I also like to ask the candidates, have you served served on any commissions, boards, specifically before you came into office? Were there things, committees you served on?
No, there really wasn't. My first introduction to local politics was, again, that house in Galt we bought.
Yeah.
When we bought it, there was a big field next to us that was empty, vacant field. And I specifically asked, what's going in this field? And I mean, I'm in my 20s, you know, late 20s. And they said, oh, it's just zoned R1 and, you know, somebody that doesn't pay attention, I don't even know what that was, you know, single family residential. I said, is it going to be more Bennett and Compton homes like ours? And they said, I don't know, it might be, you know, I don't know, it's going to be more homes. And they waited until every home in the neighborhood was sold when there was, you know, it was a development, when it was all, they were all sold at maximum dollars and maximum value. They rezoned that empty field to R3, and it was going to be a government-subsidized low-income triplexes. And so the entire neighborhood went down to the city council meeting, and that was my first foray into local politics. I went in there with the rest of the neighborhood to complain. And I, you know, I thought to myself, even as a young man, it's like, this is a waste of time. These people have already taken the money. They've already gotten the grant. They had planned on doing this. It doesn't matter what any of us say. It's going through, and it is what it is. So the for sale signs went up and down the block like dominoes, just, you know, everybody put their house up for sale. And that's when I decided, and our daughter was born then, and I said, you know what, we need to sell the house, and if we're going to sell, I'm not buying another one down here. Let's just get back home. So ended up being a great thing, because that's how it got us back home, you know, back to Shasta County and into Cottonwood. But that was my first foray into local politics. So no, I was never on any committees or boards. I did work with the state of Jefferson when that movement was going strong in 2014. You know, we thought we had a path, a possible path, and I worked pretty hard collecting signatures and stuff for that. But no, never entered, threw my hat in the ring.
So after you're elected to office, you serve on different committees.
Oh, and, boy.
Yeah, oh, lots boy. Of them, huh? Yeah,
that's why we're here early today, because I have to go to, and I know you said don't use acronyms, but I'm going to SRTA, which is the Shasta Regional Transportation Agency Board. Uh-huh. And it's the board, it's the body that is between those billions of dollars of extra gas tax that we pay in California, that extra dollar and a half a gasoline tax that we pay here. It's the billions of dollars. It's the board between those billions of dollars and the projects that we're allowed to do with that money. And it's so frustrating. It frustrates me every meeting, because they won't give you a nickel to patch a pothole. I mean, you can't. There's nothing. There's no funds go to roads at all. I mean, if you want bike paths and you want roundabouts and you want electric buses, boy, we got all that. We can give you that in a heartbeat. But fixing our roads, and it's really frustrating, because that's one of the main concerns of people is, you know, well, the roads are in disrepair. I understand that. We have 1,200 miles of roads here in Shasta County, and we have a very small budget to get those fixed. So, and it's really frustrating when I'm sitting on that board and I know there's billions of dollars out there and I can't get any of it to fix a pothole.
It would be frustrating. Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. How would you describe your political affiliation?
I'm definitely conservative. I'm definitely a constitutionalist conservative and fiscal conservative for sure. When it comes to social matters, I'm kind of more of a libertarian. I mean, you know, there's things I don't do. There's things I don't agree with, but I'm kind of like, live your own life, do your own thing. You know, I don't want to control somebody. So fiscally, I'm very fiscally conservative for sure. And kind of more of a moderate when it comes to social issues.
So talking about that, kind of share with us why you hold that perspective, why you chose those things, what inspired you, what impacted you? Just like you said, you ran for office because of a decision that's bomb. Is there some particular things, turning points that happened for you?
Probably when I managed that store in Anderson when I was 19 years old. I mean, it was a discount food store, and, you know, so we had a lot of welfare. We had a lot of food stamps. And, you know, I saw those programs being used for good. You know, there was some great people that, you know, were just, they needed the help, and that they would be coming in there, they'd be buying macaroni and, you know, spaghetti sauce and hamburger and, you know, bread and bologna. And I mean, they, you know, their kids were always clean and well-mannered. And then I saw the fraud in some of that too. That was just ridiculous. And I mean, I've seen it all. I've had a lady down in Calaveras County when we were down there. And I mean, I forget, she comes in, I'm talking to the butcher, and she says, do you have any more prawns? And he says, yeah, there's a couple packages out there. She goes, no, I need more. I mean, do you have any more? And he says, how many do you want? She goes, what are they coming? And he says, 10-pound bags. And they were $9.99 at that time. And this is back in the 90s. And she says, that would be perfect. Give me one of those. So he gives her a 10-pound bag of prawns at $99.90. And she goes up and rips out a $100 food stamp and pays for them. Now, this lady had jewelry on. Her makeup was done. Her nails were done. It looked like she was dressed and ready to go out in the town. And it's kind of like, you know, so I've seen that side of it, too. And that's when I kind of, the fiscal conservative part of me is like, you know, I think we're overtaxed and I think a lot of the dollars are wasted. And again, I'm not saying that's across the board because, right. You know, I did have some very good customers in Anderson and I was more than happy to, you know, have part of my paycheck go to help them out because they were good people and they were doing the right thing. So,
yeah, it's difficult because you will have those people that will take advantage of any program,
absolutely.
Unfortunately. And the people that need it really need those programs. So it's difficult balance to create.
It
so,
really is. Yeah.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah.
And we're experiencing that right now with our Health and Human Services. We know that big, beautiful bill that Trump passed. There was some big slashes and there's some big cuts in there. And, you know, when you hear the fraud of the Somali daycare centers that, you know, there's no kids there and they're getting millions of dollars. And you know, the doctors down in Southern California that have, you know, 2,500 patients that they're billing Medicaid to that really don't exist. You know, when you hear that stuff, you want to slash it. But we don't have those problems up here. You know, we run on a pretty tight budget. We have some very, very, very good fiscal hawks that run in our county. So when you make slashes across the board, it hurts those that are doing right.
Yes.
As well as those that are doing wrong.
Yes. And when you think of Shasta County, you know, we have the highest adverse childhood experiences, not only in the state, but in the nation.
Yeah.
You know, so we have some major challenges here. So just think of slashing those kind of programs here would be significant.
Absolutely.
And, you know, federal dollars that provide for partnership in low-income families, you know, my intention and hope is that we keep people off the streets.
Right.
Because many people live paycheck to paycheck. And if something happens, then they're out of their homes. We want to keep them in their homes.
Yeah. In this day and age, almost everybody's living paycheck to paycheck, it
yes.
seems.
Especially with the price of gas.
Oh, my goodness. And the price of everything.
Price of everything. Yeah. I can't imagine having a family of four people because of the price of food.
Yeah.
It yep. really is impacted. So also, just to clarify, you serve as chairman currently on the Shasta County Board of Supervisors. What is the role of chairman?
Well, it's actually quite a bit big jump. I mean, it's you're the first call when the, you know, sheriff has something or when the CEO has something or county council. I mean, you're the first call and you're in tune to everything. And it's like, you know, you run the meetings, you set the agenda, you approve the agenda. It's actually a pretty big role, but I mean, I'm enjoying it immensely.
And are you elected to that by your constituents or are you appointed? How's it work?
By the board. The board will make a vote. Yeah.
Yes. And how long of a term is that usually?
Just usually 1 year.
1 year.
Yeah. So. Kevin Cried did 2 years in a row, which, you know, is unusual, but his first year he was under recall. And we had two board members that really worked against the board. I mean, so he didn't really get a fair shake. And we had three new board members, which to be chairman on your first year is pretty difficult. So I didn't really think that any one of the three brand new people would be wanting to be chair or even understand it. And the first year or when he became chairman the second year, you know, I wasn't really ready to do it yet. It's a pretty big jump. I mean, I would have done it if I had to, but I wanted him to go ahead and have a fair year with, you know, out the disruption. So, but this year I was ready to do it and, you know, it's going well so far.
Okay, good. So you mentioned that one board that you serve on. Are there other boards you serve on because you're elected to Shasta County Board of Supervisors? Because I think sometimes people have the thought that you just do the meetings.
Yeah, no. No, I'm on the RABA board, which is Reading Area Bus Authority. I'm on that board. I'm on the Enterprise Anderson Groundwater Sustainability Agency board. I'm on RCRC, which is Rural County Representatives of California. And that one, it's all the rural counties. So I think I have a meeting coming up in Mariposa County. I've been to one in Modoc County. The last meeting I had was down in Sacramento, so we go all over for those meetings. But it's a very important, you know, little caucus group because it's the rural issues in California sometimes get lost in the people that vote in LA and San Francisco. So
yes.
We have a pretty big voice. We all band together and have a pretty big voice. So,
do you think the Board of Supervisors, each member works pretty much full time?
Yeah, if you're doing it right, yeah, I think you, I mean, it's my, you know, it's pretty much 7 days a week, or at least 6.5 days a week. So, you know, my couple of Saturdays ago, I have the VFW in Anderson. They treat me like royalty. I just absolutely love those folks. And so I have to go to that breakfast second Saturday of the month. Well, Shingletown Volunteer Fire Department, who also treats me like royalty, they made me an honorary member, gave me my own shirt and everything else. You know, they're great. So I have to go to that one too. I mean, I can't miss either one of those. So I do those two breakfasts. So a couple Saturdays ago, I did those two breakfasts. Then we had a spring fling event going on in Cottonwood, and we were doing a ribbon cutting. So I ran back down to Cottonwood after I got out of Shingletown and did the ribbon cutting and did the spring fling thing. Then I ran to the Laborers' Day picnic, you know, in Anderson River Park. So the laborers have endorsed me. So it was kind of like, I mean, that's a Saturday. You know, that's a day that, you know, it's not Monday through Friday. That was a Saturday, just in four events in one morning. So one afternoon.
Yes. So, yeah. You keep busy, don't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely.
If you just joined us, this is a segment of Shasta County Elections presented by KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. And myself, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I am Lynn Fritz, your producer and host. This interview is with Chris Kellstrom. He is the incumbent current chairman of the Board of Supervisors of Shasta County and candidate for Shasta County Board of Supervisor District 5. So thinking about some of the conditions that people talk about that have happened with the Board of Supervisors, lots of conflict and lots of, you might say, tension in the room. And as a member, what is your perspective when you have lots of conflict going on and how to work with that to hopefully just diffuse it?
Yeah, well, and I think the temperature has kind of calmed down in the room. I think it's gone down in the room a little bit. My very first meeting, you know, we knew they were going to test me. They wanted to see what the new guy was going to do. So, you know, but I was kind of instructed or advised by county council and CEO. It's kind of like, hey, you need to nip it in the bud, and you need to be very specific about the behaviors that you're correcting, because it'll all end up in court eventually. So somebody yelled out from, you know, the one side, and I banged the gavel and said, do not yell out, interrupt the meeting. You have freedom of speech. When you have your 3 minutes to speak to us or 2 minutes to speak to us, you have freedom of speech, and I will protect that. That's constitutionally protected. But it's against the law. You can't disrupt a meeting. You can't disturb the peace. So when you're yelling out from the crowd, that's disturbing the peace and interrupting a meeting. So I banged the gavel and said, you know, do not yell out and interrupt the meeting. And then somebody else yelled out, and I did the same, gave them the same warning. And then someone on the other side yelled out, and I banged the gavel and I told them not to interrupt the meeting either. So I think that there alone kind of calmed things a little bit, because I'm doing it to both sides. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're my friend. If you interrupt the meeting, I just did it this last meeting. There's a friend of mine, a personal friend of mine. She had yelled out at somebody else that was yelling out, and I banged the gavel and I admonished her too. Don't yell out and interrupt the meeting. And I said, again, I don't care who you are. I don't care what side you're on. Don't interrupt the meeting. The first meeting, the person that yelled out the first time yelled out again. I said, all right, you've been warned. You need to leave. And I said, officer, have him removed. And, you know, it's all on body camera. John is a local deputy that I know. He went over there and said, okay, you need to leave. He says, no, I'm not leaving. He says, he asked you to leave. You need to leave. He says, I'm not leaving. He says, look, we can do it one of two ways. You can either leave or I can arrest you. What do you want to do? And he says, arrest me. He says, okay, you know, stand up and put the handcuffs on him and walk him down to the jail. I mean, it's like, wow. I don't know. I think in their mind, they're being Rosa Parks or something. You know, they're really standing up for rights. And I don't know. I mean, sometimes I go to the Anderson City Council meetings, or even Reading City Council meetings sometimes, just to see how business is done without all the sideshow. But it seems to be getting better. They realize now that I'm not putting up with it from anybody, no matter which side you're on. You know, if you want to yell at us and go up to your 2 minutes of public comment or 3 minutes of public comment and yell at us all you want, that's protected under the Constitution. And I took an oath to uphold that. So, but don't interrupt the meeting.
You know, I think that's for some people, it's hard for them to differentiate. You do not have a right to disrupt the meeting. You have a right to public comment.
Absolutely.
And there's a protocol, and that's provided by the structure of the meetings and our protected speech. But you also, when you disrupt a meeting, you're infringing on everybody else's rights.
You're right. And this is the very last meeting that happened again, and she's already been convicted of disturbing the peace. And, you know, she was kind of yelling out, and I'd warned her a couple times. And, you know, finally I said, okay, that's your last warning. And well, then she stood up and she's holding her hands out. And I, you know, tried to ignore her for the longest time. And finally I said, you need to sit down. And she goes, no, you said it's my last warning, arrest me. I said, please sit down. And she goes, no, arrest me. And I said, okay, you need to leave. And she goes, and she kept holding her hands out like she wanted to be arrested. And I asked her, I said, are you sure you really want to do this? I mean, so she got arrested, booked into jail. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, I know that they think they're an activist and they're making change, but they're not. And they're just impacting their own lives. So,
and you know, one of the things that I try to communicate to community is that people can access the Shasta County Board of Supervisors. All have emails.
Yeah,
you can send one email that all of them get the same email. And when I've talked with the different members, they always feel to me like they're open to hear from people.
Absolutely.
And so you can talk with them in other ways than just at a meeting.
Yeah. And that's why I do everything that I do. I mean, I go all over the place. I mean, I was just in Shingletown last night. I was calling out bingo numbers at the fire hall. And then I stopped at the pizza parlor on the way home and, you know, talk to people there. But I mean, I go everywhere all the time, everywhere I go. And it's like I go to all the car shows and the show and shines, and I'll be collecting tickets at the front box at the Cottonwood Rodeo. And I mean, because I like to be around everyday normal people, and it's surprising how many people will come up to me and go, and you know, people that will never send an email, they'll never come to a meeting, they'll never leave a voicemail, but they'll come up to me and go, hey man, appreciate what you're doing, keep up the good work, you know. And it's like, and that makes it so worthwhile, you know. Some of the nonsense you got to put up with, that makes everything worthwhile when I get around normal everyday people that respect what I do and appreciate what I do.
Yeah, certainly. So if you were to describe, I don't know if it's a philosophy or kind of how you work when there are conflicts and divisions, is there any particular strategy used to kind of bridge that?
Well, I just make sure I'm even across the board. I do it both sides. And I think the crowd's kind of figured that out. You know, Patrick Jones, one of the, you know, knocks against him was he was hard on one side and a little more leaning on the other side. And it's like, no, you got to be consistent. You got to be the same across the board. Kevin Cry, his first year, and of course he's under recall and he had some other pressures on him. He was probably a little harder on one side. The second year he was very consistent too. I mean, he was both sides. So I'm just like, I want to be very consistent and I'm not favoring one side or the other. It's just everybody behave. That's all I ask. Everybody behave. I don't care who you are. Just behave. Come up here, yell at us for your 2 or 3 minutes in public comment. You know, yell at us all you want. Say whatever you want. That's protected speech. So you do what you want there. But otherwise, behave yourself in the meeting. That's all.
So the meeting can function.
Yeah. And our last meeting was a pretty contentious subject. So, you know, the register of voters right now is just, I mean, that's a hotbed of controversy. So, you know, both sides were there. The side that thinks he's the, you know, Messiah and the side that thinks he's the Antichrist. I mean, they were both there and they were both very opinionated. So it was a pretty hot meeting, but you know, it went relatively well. I mean, everybody got their points across. And I mean, it was kind of funny, the public comments, because it's like you get one person up there and they're just like, oh, he's the greatest thing ever. He's the, you know, he's the best thing that's ever happened to us. He's, you know, da, da, da. And then the next one would be like, he is the worst thing that's ever happened to us. And it was just like, we're all talking about the same guy. So, you know, but again, it's a pretty divisive issue. So,
yes. And it's interesting because the Shasta County Clerk and Registrar of Voters is an elected position.
Yes.
And it's a little different. I mean, does the Shasta County Board of Supervisors serve as a supervisory capacity for that position?
No. Yeah. The only thing we control is the budget. So, I mean, theoretically, you know, that's about the only thing we could do, is we could cut positions or we could, you know, whatever. That's the only thing that we control. We really have no control. Our current one was not elected, once he's in the position, he's considered an elected official and he runs under those rules. So, yeah.
And the thing that governs him is the state, correct?
Secretary of State. Yeah. He answers Secretary of State. Yeah. But as elected official, he answers to the voters. That's, you know, that's who you answer to.
Yes.
So,
because I think sometimes people think the Shasta County Board of Supervisors should step in and take action.
Right. We get a lot of that. You know, you need to go do something. You need to make him resign. You need to, you know, you need to fire him. It's like, well, we that's not an option.
Don't have the power.
No, you know, just like we can't fire the sheriff, we can't fire the DA, we can't fire the tax collector. I mean, they're elected positions. So, and fortunately, we have great people in those elected positions. Yeah. So,
yes, yes. So, what do you think are some of the major challenges facing Shasta County?
Well, right now, the budget is tight. We're doing better than most of the surrounding areas. City of Anderson's running in the red. City of Redding's running in the red. Tehama County's running in the red. We're in the black, but, you know, it's grayish black. I mean, we're doing okay. But, I mean, there's like this upcoming budget in June. There's going to be some budgets that are probably flat, which as a taxpayer, you're going, well, there's nothing wrong with that. You get the same money you got last year. You know, that's not a cut. Well, it actually is a cut because everything goes up. Prices, insurance every year, insurance just go up ridiculously amounts, whether it's workers' comp or personal liability. I mean, they all go up. So if you have the same budget you had last year, but you have increased costs, then it is basically a cut. So, but we're going to keep everything. The wheels will be on the bus. We're all doing okay. It's just, like I said, there's not a whole ton of extra money out there.
Yes. Things are tight, I think, everywhere. Shasta County Board of Supervisors, what kind of oversight do you have for, say, the issue of homelessness?
You know, that's a really tough one. I mean, first of all, 90% of that problem is the city of Redding, and that's not really our jurisdiction. We funded some programs that work. You know, that's the thing. There's a ton of programs out there. There's tons of programs. There really is. And if you're homeless and you want help and you want to get back on your feet and reenter society, there's a lot of programs that will help you do that. Lots of programs. The problem is a lot of them, that's their lifestyle. They don't want to reenter into society. You know, Kevin Cry used to go down below Mercy Canyon there. And so I was there and there with him one day, and we had to have a guide because you don't just walk into a homeless camp. They don't know who you are. Sometimes it doesn't work well. So we had a guide, and I mean, very nice fellow. I mean, super nice guy. And Kevin was asking him, he goes, when are you ready? He goes, are you ready yet? And he says, no, I'm just not there yet. And he goes, you have skills. He says, you know, you were a carpenter. He goes, I can get you a job. He goes, I'm just not ready yet. You know, and we go in there, and I mean, this guy's built some little cabinets in his tent, and he's cut steps into the hillside to go up to his tent. And I mean, he's found a couch somewhere and drug that in there. And I mean, he has this whole thing set up, and it's like, he doesn't want to go into society. He doesn't want to go back to work. He doesn't want to go back into paying bills. He just, that's his life. And it's really hard to get somebody like that. Well, how can you give them help if they don't want help? You know, and he didn't want help. I mean, if Kevin was offering him help, he didn't want help.
Yeah.
He wanted to live that lifestyle. So it's a tough one. It really is. So,
and you know, it's hard because you have a lot of mental illness. You have people like we talked about at the beginning that situational, something happens financially and they lose their place of residence.
Yeah.
It's clear across the board, whole different stories if you talk with them, and it's very challenging. And I think the city and all those municipalities that are involved in setting up micro shelters to get people back into life, I think is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and the Good News Rescue Mission has some good programs. And when I found out that they've never turned anybody away because they were full, they've never been to capacity, and that kind of, my compassion level went down a little bit, because I'm thinking, you know, if, you know, heaven forbid, if I was ever in that position where suddenly I found myself homeless and I knew there was a place I could go to get a hot shower and warm clothes and a warm bed and a warm meal to eat, and but I just had to follow a couple of rules to do it. I mean, there's nothing I wouldn't do to do that. And So when I found out that they've never turned anybody away because they're full, you know, it's kind of like, so you would rather live under a bridge or something rather than follow a couple simple rules and get back on your feet. And, you know, I don't know, my compassion level went a little bit down on that one.
Yeah, it's challenging because transportation to get to the Good News Rescue Mission sometimes is an issue. And then one of the things I've loved about Jonathan Anderson is that he said our services, unless you go into their total rehab program, it's not faith-based. Anyone can come have a meal. Anyone can come and reside there. I think it's up to 30 days. And that they're all open. And so they welcome that. But oftentimes people think, well, I'm not Christian and I'm not religious and I don't want that to have to be criteria for me to get a meal. Yeah. So that sometimes there's just misunderstanding about what they do.
Yeah.
They're very active in the community and I really respect the work they do.
Yeah, and we've got some opioid dollars that we've filtered their way because they have a program that they're going to be building and, you know, it looks like it's going to be a great program. So, you know, I'll tell you, my favorite program around here is the Step Up program, and it's not so much as much for homeless as it is just addicted offenders, really. And so when I first won 4 years ago, we were meeting department heads and I was supposed to go meet Stephanie Bridget. This is December of 2022. And I had a cold at the time. And I always like to be early and make sure I know where I'm going. So I went to, you know, saw where her office was going to be. And then I ran around the corner to a store. I won't name it, but I ran around the corner to a store. And I went in there and asked the young lady working, you know, where's your cough drops? And she pointed me in the right direction. So I went up there to pay for them, and she rang me up, and there was, you know, thank you, have a good day, and there was not another reason, no reason for me to say another word to this gal, you know, other than, you know, have a good day, thank you. And I just, out of the blue, I just kind of looked as I was walking to the doors, and I noticed you got bars on your doors like every other business in, you know, Reading does. And she says, yeah, she goes, when I got here today, she goes, there was a transient sleeping on the front porch. I said, well, he's still here, he's down there by the bike rack now. And she goes, you know, she goes, I got arrested in this very same parking lot, you know, 7 years ago or whatever it was. And she says, I was addicted to dope. I was selling dope. I was strung out. She says, I was, you know, and weighed 98 pounds. And she says, I was facing, I think, 5 years in prison. And she goes, I went before, was it Judge Flynn? Judge Flynn has a program too. But she says, I went for the judge and they were going to sentence her to prison. And he says, or you can go to the Step Up program. And it was and that's when I first heard about the Step Up program. So she says, I went to Step Up program. And I don't remember if she already had her diploma or GED, but either way, she took college classes and got college credits. And she says, now I'm assistant manager here, you know? And it's like, I mean, I'm like, I was put here to hear this story, you know? Yeah. I mean, I was here to hear the story. So ever since then, that's been my favorite program. We've got some opioid dollars settled to them. And come to find out how it started was one of our guys that worked in probation, it was all grassroots. He kind of talked to somebody at Shasta College and they said, hey, you know, can we do this program and get him into the college and get him some credits and whatever? And then it went off from there. And now it's, you know, this is a great program. And then we go to the graduations and they just, you hear these people's stories and it's amazing. It just gives you goosebumps. It's awesome.
That is powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yes.
And we just had Judge Flynn's graduation, addicted offenders graduation the other day. And same thing. There was only three of them this time, but I mean, you hear the story and he starts out by showing their booking photo. And from their booking photo, I mean, the transformation they made from where they're graduating this program and they're, you know, clean cut and you know, nice clothes. And I mean, one guy was wearing a suit and then they show the booking photo. And I mean, it's like, holy cow, that's the same guy. So, but it's great. You hear their story and they're all doing good. And they all, you know, that most of them have been sober, clean and sober for like 3 years apiece, 2.5 years apiece. So, it's a great program, too.
Yeah, powerful, yeah. Powerful. If you just joined us, this is a segment of Shasta County Elections presented by KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. This interview is with Chris Kellstrom. He's the incumbent and current chair of the Shasta County Board of Supervisors and a candidate for Shasta County Board of Supervisors District 5. So, Chris, when you think we were talking about the issues that are here in Shasta County, what about conversations that are going on about a new jail?
Yeah, a new jail. So about 7 or 8 years ago, Fresno built a new jail, new 500-bed facility for about $40 million. So we started setting aside money 3 years ago, and we have about $34 million set aside, which we're thinking, you know, when we got the $30 million in there, we're thinking, okay, well, a few more million, and then we'll be able to build a jail. Well, we talked about it earlier, the cost of everything has just gone through the roof. It's so much higher in the last 5 years that the same new jail that cost Fresno $40 million would be about $150 million today. So that's pretty much off the table. The only way we'd be able to build a new jail is if we had a tax increase, and we saw what happened to Measure A in the city of Reading. Tax increases are not very popular with the voters, or nor myself. So really, to build a new jail, unless we get some sort of state or federal funding, it's going to be very difficult to build a new jail. So the city of Reading gave us 90 acres of land over off 273 north of Jolly Green Giant Flea Market there for a dollar. So we have a 90-acre facility or piece of land over there that the sheriff would like to do alternative custody program on. And then we've talked to a company at Amity that runs some houses that are like halfway locked, halfway houses that they bring in half state prisoners and half county prisoners that have less than 2 years left on their term. And they get them reentered into society, get them some, teach them some job skills, get their, you know, records cleaned up and get them all prepared to go back into society. And it's a good program. The problem is that 90 acres is in my district, and there's about 90 homeowners down there that are absolutely against us putting anything down there, which is understandable. I mean, they live in a nice, quiet little neighborhood. Nobody even knows they're back there. You know, they're surrounded by fields and you know, down towards the river. And I mean, so they don't want it in their backyard, which is understandable. So I'm kind of in the caught in the middle here where I fully 100% support our sheriff. It's something that needs to be done. But these are my constituents that are absolutely adamantly against it. So I have to now walk that line where I need to support my constituents, but I'm also supporting the sheriff. So, you know, it's all tied up in court right now anyway. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah. And with a facility like that, isn't there increased supervision? So you don't have to worry so much about people getting out and creating harm in the neighborhood.
And I actually said that early on when I was trying to talk with these neighbors. I said, listen, you're probably going to be safer now than you are now. I mean, you're going to have half a dozen sheriff's deputies and a half a dozen correctional officers right around the corner from you, yeah. You know, but again, they've, you know, they're convinced or they've been telling everybody that people are just going to walk away and, you know, grab kids off the street and break into homes. And, you know, they're the people that are on the farm, which a big portion of that, we want to make the farm. So right now we have a little county farm over off Breslauer. And, you know, these are low level DUIs, you know, petty theft. I mean, they're low level crimes that, and they'll be sentenced to like 30 work days. Well, they just want to do their 30 days and go back home and be done with it. And they're all ankle monitored, you know, so they go out there, they work on the farm all day and then they go home, you know, and again, ankle monitor. So you are to go to the farm, do your work day and go straight home. And then you're at home, you're in home confinement until you go back there the next day. But again, I get it. They don't want it in their backyard, and it's understandable that they're fighting it. So, and I'm stuck in the middle.
Yeah. What a challenge.
Yeah.
I'm going to shift gears here a little bit, and we hear conversations about voter fraud nationally, concerns about voter security here in Shasta County. Do you believe across the nation there's an issue around voter fraud?
Well, I think the 2020 election raised some questions for me. I mean, I don't know if a lot of people know it or not, but Donald Trump got a larger percentage increase in votes than any other incumbent president in history. He got more votes than any president in history, and yet he still lost. So, and from a guy that was kind of running out of his basement. So that definitely raised some questions. There was definitely some things there that were questionable. But, you know, is it happening here in Shasta County? You know, I don't think so. And we have, you know, now we have the one thing our register of voters has done is he's made it very transparent. He's got cameras and monitors all over the place. He's got ballot security is very good. He's, you know, two people go to pick up the ballots. They, you know, he instructs them, do not stop and get a soda. Do not stop and use the restroom. You go straight to the precinct and straight back and teams of two. All the ballots are locked in sealed containers out in the open where everybody can see them, clear containers. So then he photographs the ballots as they go into the machine. So there's a photographic record of what went in, and obviously it better match what came out the other side. So, do I think it's widespread? I don't know. I think there's been some very questionable things that have popped up, some races that have popped up. I know, and nobody made a big deal out of it. I think it was in 2016, Orange County had six congressional races going on. Six Republicans were leading the race that evening, and then a bunch of votes came in the middle of the night, and all six of them lost, and six Democrats won the next day. Well, you know, is that an anomaly? Possibly, but it seems awful strange. And that's a 12-point or 12-seat switch in the House. So, you know, I mean, I've gone to a lot of the election integrity people that, you know, different people that have come here and put on talks, and, you know, I've listened to what they have to say. So I don't know, where there's smoke, there's quite possibly fire.
Do you think previous to the current registrar of voters, Clint Curse, that you were concerned about the security or legitimacy of local elections?
No, but I think, you know, it seemed like every election since COVID, until recently, every election right off the get-go, there was a giant kind of a leap to the left. And then as the votes would come in and the votes would trickle in throughout the night, there would, you know, they would move more towards the center and then over towards the right. So, like, for instance, my race, we had a big, you know, election night party down at the Legion Hall in Cottonwood. And we told everybody, hey, the first votes that come out, you know, they're it's going to swing to the left. So, you know, just don't worry about the first votes. And sure enough, 8:15 or 8:20, whatever, and they popped up and I was down 500 votes. And everybody's kind of depressed, and we'd warn them, it's okay, don't worry about that. Well, it wasn't until about 10:30 at night, the second set of numbers came out, and I was down by 250 votes. And everybody was kind of like still bummed, and I go, no, listen, we're going in the right direction. I just gained 250 votes. We're going in the right direction. We're okay. And it wasn't until like 1:15 in the morning when I was finally up by 100. And I remember I got called by a reporter, and he says, well, you just, at 1:15 in the morning, mind you, and he says, yeah, you just went up in the polls. And I said, yeah, I said, I just won. And he goes, you think you won? I said, yeah, I know I won. And he goes, okay. He goes, you think this will hold? I said, the margin of my win will just increase as time goes on. I said, the margin will just get bigger and bigger. And I said, yes, I definitely won. And then I remember him saying, well, now that you won, what are you going to do? I said, what do you mean? What am I going to do? I'm going to do every darn thing. That's not what I said, but I said, I'll have to do every darn thing that I said I was going to do. I said, those weren't just campaign promises. I said, I meant every word of that. And he was like, what? I said, like, for term limits. I told you I'm going to get term limits. And I got them on Measure C, went on the ballot. And I said, and not taking the retirement. I said, I'm not going to get into the CalPERS retirement. I won't take it. I said, everything I said I was going to do, I'm going to do. I said, those weren't just campaign promises. Those weren't empty. So, you know, that. So, yeah, that race, I mean, my race, you know, again, I had a 500 vote right off the get-go. I was behind and then slowly gained throughout the night. So there seems to be, and some of that is said to be, well, you know, a lot of the more left-leaning people, they vote early. They send in their ballots immediately. As soon as they get in, they send in their ballots, and conservatives wait until the day of voting and they go in there. So that's why there's a gap. In the 2022 primary, there seem to be some very, very huge gaps. I mean, bigger than normal. So, but again, I'm not going to go down that road. So,
in the past, we had 24 drop boxes throughout Shasta mm-hmm. County. Currently, we only have 4. The current registrar of voters pulled back all those boxes. So we have 2 in Redding, 1 in Shasta Lake, and 1 in Anderson.
And they all have a camera on in Purdue, by the way.
Yeah. Do you think pulling in those boxes, especially when you're rural like Bernie, having those taken away is helpful or detrimental? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, that was my idea, so... Yeah, I don't think it's detrimental at all. Everybody gets a mailed out ballot now. I mean, everybody, you get one in the mail. You know, it used to be this county before COVID used to vote about 75% absentee. I mean, we were already voting by mail in this county quite a bit. Now with COVID, everybody gets a ballot. So you can fill that ballot out, put it back in the envelope, and send it right back in your mailbox. And you can send it right back to where you got it from. You can send it back. So we already have millions of drop boxes or thousands of drop boxes anyways, if you want to consider the drop boxes at the post office. So we already have the ability to do that. So, you know, there was a movie with the 2,000 mules in Arizona. And I, to be honest with you, I've never watched it, but I mean, I've heard all about it. And you know, they did some tracking and seemed to be some ballot stuffing going on. And so we just want to eliminate that option where, you know, the 4 that we have is what we're legally required to have. And they all have cameras on them. So, you know, if somebody walks up with a backpack full of ballots and shoves them in there, well, there's a photographic record of that. We're going to, you know, figure that out. So, and with the California making ballot harvesting legal, I mean, theoretically, you could be completely legal walking up with a backpack full of ballots and shoving them in there. But, you know, it might be legal, but is it on the up and up? I don't know.
But you think about the process they do to make sure people are voting legitimately. You could have a backpack full of ballots, but you can only vote once per person because it's based upon signature.
True. But if you were running, say, an Alzheimer's home and everybody in there was registered, but you know they really weren't of fair sound mind, if they all get a ballot, theoretically somebody could fill their ballot out for them and drop it in a drop box.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where I don't think there's the necessity for the drop boxes. Now, I did meet with Joanna at one point, who's also running for registered voters, and that came up, the drop box situation came up, and she asked me, she says, would you mind if I put one back in Shingletown and Bernie, I think it was the two places she mentioned. And I said, well, if you win, you'll be the registered voters, and I really don't have any say in it. I said, but, you know, I'd prefer that they have a camera on them, some sort of a camera or some sort, or in a secure place where people can see them and watch them. So, you know, but again, she'll be the register. If she's the registered voters, that's her call, not mine. So the places you mentioned, I guess there is a need for them up there.
Yeah. If you just tuned in, this is a segment of Shasta County Elections. It's presented by KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. We are here in conversation with Chris Kellstrom. He is the current incumbent for the Shasta County Board of Supervisors District 5. He's also current chairman of the Shasta County Board of Supervisors, and he's running again for office. So tell me, Chris, what drew you to become a candidate again?
I think we've done a lot of good work, and there's still a lot of work to do. We've got a new CEO who is just, he's a fiscal hawk, and he was an elected treasurer back in Illinois. And I mean, I just can't speak highly enough of him. Our county council, you know, now our county council is kind of funny. He's hated by the far left. He's hated by the far right. So he must be doing something good. But our county council, I mean, he is the best county council this county's ever had and probably ever will have. You know, been working with the sheriff a lot. Our sheriff is doing a fantastic job. I've promoted from within and public works, and who's retiring tomorrow, Troy, darn you, but a great guy. We've promoted from within in resource management and health and human services. We've hired a new public health doctor or public health officer. So, I mean, we've made some big changes, and I think we're going in the right direction. I want to continue to go in that right direction. And, you know, we've got a lot of stuff done. My resource management team, I cannot speak highly enough of them. I'm kind of the mama bear when it comes to those guys. I'm very protective of them because they've made huge strides. You know, some of the things you hear about how hard it was to build here and how hard it was to get permits and how hard the inspections were and, you know, how just some of the stupidity that still goes on in the city of Reading, by the way. But you know, heard all those stories, and I can't speak highly enough of the great work they've done. It used to be applied for a permit to, say, rebuild your garage. If the county found a garden shed that was, you know, over 120 square feet that didn't have a permit on it, they wouldn't give you a permit for your garage until you got the garden shed in compliance or whatever. Just ridiculous things like that. Well, now I'm happy to say that if you apply for a permit and they find something out of compliance, they'll inform you it's out of compliance. But if it doesn't directly affect what you're pulling the permit for, they just give you your permit and let you do your project. And I'm thinking, why did it take 40 years for that to happen? You know, so I'm very happy with that. Code enforcement also, when I was running, I'd mentioned that, you know, code enforcement, we shouldn't be using our employees and our county assets to monitor people's properties and fly drones over or look at Google Maps of pit laces and see somebody put a shed up or a garage up that they weren't supposed to, didn't have a permit for. And so now I'm happy to say that code enforcement now is complaint driven. So, you know, if you're living in a camp trailer on your property and it's against county code, if none of your neighbors turn you in for it, then no big deal. They're not going to go out and look for that. Now, if you turn your neighbor in for that, then they will come out and they'll do an investigation and they'll do that. So they are complaint driven now. They don't drive around looking for somebody doing something, building a deck without a permit or whatever. They don't do that anymore, which I'm very happy to say that that's going on too. So there's a lot of things that we've done and implemented and are still implementing and getting in the right direction. And I'm very proud of that work and I want to continue to do it.
Makes sense. So if you're reelected, are there specific projects or focus of things that you want to work on?
Well, I mean, I want to continue my work with resource management for sure. Public works, we're in need of a new director there now, so there might be some changes there. You know, I want to work with them. Those are kind of my two areas. You know, when Kevin and I won in 2022. That was the year the ACID canal was drained, was empty for the first time in 100 plus years. And so he had come up to me and he says, well, what do you want to work on? You know, and I said, well, I want to make sure that never happens to the ACID canal again. I said, I want to work on a fire ordinance, which has now been written. And I said, you know, and I want to work with building and planning department, resource management. And he says, I want to work with on homeless and mental health. And I'm like, they're all yours, buddy. You know, you can have them. So that, because that's such a complicated issue, you know, and it's, and he does. He does a lot of work for that. So that was kind of our arrangement. And that's to this day, that's kind of how it still goes. If he has somebody that has a permitting issue or, you know, something, he usually directs them to me. And same thing if I have somebody that has, you know, hey, we have this problem with, you know, whatever. And I'm like, okay, you need to talk to Kevin Craig. And he's found quite a few people. He's got quite a few people in homes. He's got them, you know, back off the streets and stuff. So he's done some good things. I've done some good things. And, you know, we just work in like different areas.
Yeah. So, the other thing that you hear people talking about, Shasta County needs to do their own thing and not pay attention to the state. You'll hear people making comments about that. Do you think it's important to have a good working relationship with the state?
It would be nice. I don't know what that would look like because they have literally passed several laws directly against Shasta County. You know, when we got rid of Dominion voting machines, they passed a law that said you can't get rid of your voting system unless you have another one in place. So while we were trying to put hand tabulation in place, they passed a law that said hand tabulation is against the law. We did it for 150 years here, but we can't do it anymore. It's against the law. When we were fighting the Fountain Windmill project, they not only shut it down, they said, you know, 4-1 vote to not put the windmills up there. They rezoned the entire county, so nowhere in this county is it permitted to put an industrial size windmill over, you know, however many hundreds of feet tall, da da da. And California passed a law that said, we don't care what you say, this is go through the Energy Commission and they'll put the windmills and the solar farms anywhere they damn near please, and the county has no say in it. So they have passed several laws. When we recalled Leonard Modi, they passed a law that said, okay, if you recall or if somebody resigns or dies in office, then the governor gets to pick the replacement, not the people of the county. So, I mean, they passed several laws specifically targeting Shasta County. So it would be nice to have a good working relationship with them, but I'm not sure what even that even looks like. I mean, we try. I mean, I sit on a lot of the boards that are the go-betweens between the state and the county and, you know, Caltrans and different projects. So, so yeah, we try, but...
And don't we receive funds from the state?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we can't really live on our own.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully having a good working relationship. And, you know, some of the things you're talking about, like the recall and or when there's a vacancy in office, that applies throughout the whole of California, not just Shasta County.
Correct. But yeah. it was that law was put into place as soon as we recalled as this chairman of the board here in Shasta County, and they made that new law. Mm-hmm. So you're right. It affects the rest of the county. I mean, the states, but I think it was probably put in place because of us.
When you encourage people to vote, why do you do that? Why do you encourage them to vote?
Well, I mean,
specifically for you. Let's
yeah.
Say for
okay.
You.
Oh, for me. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I want to keep up the work I'm doing. I think I do a pretty good job of representing the people of my district. You know, we just had an issue down in Manton and there was a solar project that was being put down there and because they're dismantling all the powerhouses in the Battle Creek Canyon. So they bought this, and so they have the transmission lines, and they're no longer transmitting hydroelectric power. So a company out of San Francisco wanted at least a farm or at least a ranch and wanted to put solar panels there. Well, I went to the meeting, and, you know, my residents in Manton, I've worked very hard to get their support. I go in Manton, I was just in Manton last weekend, you know, so love the people of Manton. Manton's a lot like Cottonwood, half of it's Tama County, half it's Shasta County.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I've worked very hard to get their support, and, you know, and I go there a lot. And, you know, so one of the ladies that I know, she'd asked me the question when these people were up here meeting the residents and trying to, you know, tell them what's going to happen with the solar farm and, you know, alleviate their concerns, so to speak. She goes, Chris, I'm going to put you on the spot. She goes, you know, sorry, but I'm putting you on the spot. What's your opinion on this? And I said, you're not putting me on the spot at all. I said, my opinion is the least valuable opinion in this entire room. I said, what I think doesn't matter. I said, my job as a representative is to represent you. If you guys are all for this project, then great. I'm all for it. If you're all against it, then great. I'm all against it. I said, what I think doesn't matter. That's not how it's supposed to work. I'm supposed to say, you know, whatever you guys want. Well, as it turned out, they really rallied the troops down there and they were absolutely adamantly against the project. So when it came before the Planning Commission, it was voted 3-2 to let the project go forward. They appealed it to the board. And when it came to the board, even though personally, I didn't think it was a bad project at all, I don't think it's going to be nearly as bad as they think it is. my job as a representative is to represent them. And I got like two letters of support in favor of it. And I got a 100 of letters of support and voicemails and emails and that were against it. So I voted no. You know, the rest of the board voted yes, I voted no. And because that was my job as a representative, is to represent my communities. And that's what I did.
Which I think is also another point for people tuning in to pay attention to. You're listening to the people.
Absolutely.
And so it's important for people to speak up. And, you know, sometimes people are just silent. They might talk to their neighbors. They might talk to their family, but they don't speak to their representative.
Yep.
And so the encouragement is speak to your representative. Send them an email. Send them a letter. You know,
and that's why I do all the things that I do. That's why I go to every breakfast and potluck and, you know, car show and shine and rodeos. I mean, that's why I do everything that I do, because I get normal, everyday people that will never send an email. They'll never leave a voicemail. They'll never come to a meeting, but they'll walk up to me and go, hey, man, appreciate the good work. Keep up the good work. Appreciate you. You know, and it's like that makes everything worthwhile. I mean, I just had a gentleman at a show and shine at the OK Corral in Cottonwood, and we just had a car show the night before on Front Street, and then we had a show and shine there. And so he comes up to me and he goes, hey, I wanted to meet you. And I go, okay, you know, nice to meet you. And he goes, man, he goes, you're everywhere. He goes, I see you everywhere. He goes, I saw you over at Wilma Jean's, which is the old Rooster's Landing. They've reopened it as a Wilma Jean's restaurant. He goes, I saw you at Wilma Jean's. He says, I saw you last night at the car show. He goes, now you're here today. And I go, this is why I do it. I said, I want to be accessible to everybody. And I want everybody to be able to come up to me and say, hey, you know, this needs to be done, or that needs to be done, or I keep up the good work here, or you need to change your mind on this one, or whatever. So, you know, that's why I get out in the community as much as I do, because that's what you need to do as a representative.
Yes, yes. We're close to being out of time. I want to touch base on the last question. I've asked all the candidates the same thing. Is there any particular organization that influences your decision? Meaning that there's some conversations about powerful groups in our community that control our elected officials. So for you,
absolutely not. You know, it's funny. So the Wind River agreement, when we voted on that, and Wind River is, I think they're a great community supporter. I think they do some great work. I can't speak highly enough of them. Okay, yeah, like I didn't take any corporate or maximum contributions my first go around. So like when Wind River, when that vote came up to move the casino down there and enter in the agreement with them, it was kind of nice because, you know, Patrick Jones had taken some money from him, Kevin Cry had taken money from him, and Tim Garman had taken money from him. I didn't. And, you know, so I was able to go up there and say, listen, I don't have a dog in this hunt. You know, nobody's helped me. I'm voting this way because I think it's truly the best thing to do. And, you know, and I think Wind River, they were pretty impressed with that too, because it's like, I'm not doing this because you donated to me. I'm doing this because it's the right thing to do, in my opinion. So no, now this go around, I do have some more donors that, you know, I think I have the Laborers Union has endorsed me, and they're going to give me a check. Sierra Pacific, actually, the first go around, they had somebody working there that didn't like me and my group of people that I hung around with. And they actually were negative towards me and did some things. Now they were the first ones to donate to my new campaign. And I mean, I went and toured their facility, and they're, you know, and they're great. And it kind of bothered me the first election, because I'm like, what did I ever do to you? I think you're a great company. You know, I didn't do anything to you. I think you guys are great. In fact, I wanted to work on the cogeneration plant that you got the permit denied for, but since that time, that's been fixed. But anyhow, so yeah, I took a check from them. And then Wind River, of course, they're big supporters now, because I did the right thing when, you know, there was nothing in it other than me doing the right thing. So they have donated the maximum contribution to me. My first election, I did not have a single maximum contribution anywhere. And it actually kind of choked me up when I was getting sworn in, because I'm looking at all the people there, and people that just everyday, normal, everyday blue collar folks that took the day off from work to come watch me get sworn in. And it was actually, it was pretty emotional, because it's like, these are the people that I answer to. That's literally we the people. There's no, you know, there's no corporations in here. There's no big groups in here. These are just common everyday folks that bought a table at my fundraiser, or bought some raffle tickets, or, you know, played cornhole or whatever, you know, bought some playing cards from the pick of the litter. And I mean, it's like, these are just normal, everyday, great people that supported me. And that's who I answer to. And it means the world to me.
If people want to find out more information, your website for your campaign?
Yeah, chriskellstrom.com. Pretty easy one.
Spell Kellstrom for us.
K-E-L-S-T-R-O-M as in Mary.
And any other way to contact you?
Absolutely. 530-744-4539. The last time I put that out on the air, by the way, I started getting calls from the jail. So that phone has since been blocked. But if you're not in jail, go ahead and call me at 744-4539.
That's funny. And also, as the incumbent, he currently serves on the Board of Supervisors. All the Board of Supervisors, you can email and give input to decisions they're making. I want to thank Chris Kellstrom. He is the incumbent and chairman, current chairman of the Shasta County Board of Supervisors. He's also a candidate running for District 5. I want to thank our listeners and encourage, I think you hear from both of us, encouragement, show up, turn out, vote.